From KQED Public Radio and the California Report, this is the Capitol Notes podcast for Friday, July 1st. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
We should have some champagne or horns or noisemakers. I'm John Myers from KQED, and the celebratory voice on the other side is Kevin Yamamura of the Sacramento Bee, who good enough to walk back down here. We both kind of look bleary-eyed, I think, from this week that we had.
I need a haircut.
All kinds of... to see her kids, things that we feel like we have not done this week. It was the big budget week at the Capitol. So big, in fact, that our friend Anthony York is still writing at this very moment on a Friday. So we will leave him to whatever brilliant piece he has come up for the weekend for in the Times. Kevin and I will just make it up as we go along of the week that we lived. And we were just, talking about what a long week it felt like it was. And obviously some of that is because of all the things that happened. Governor and Democrats announced they had a deal on Monday. We had votes on Tuesday night. We had the budget signed with line item vetoes on Thursday. It was a full week.
It was a full week. I mean, I feel like it's been 10 days already.
It does. It does. Especially when your job is to cover the budget nonstop, and yours especially is. And so.
Yeah. I mean, I remember waking up Wednesday morning, and I just wake up early now because my kid wakes up early. So, anyway, I couldn't go back to sleep, and I had this inkling that I'd just start looking at the budget trailer bills because I am a glutton for punishment. And, well, one of them came across at 10:15, the education trailer
which
bill.
Which actually proved to be a good story for you.
I started reading it, and I was like, wow, there's some interesting nuggets in here.
So what you can glean by listening to Kevin say that is that he gets up early in the morning, and the first thing he thinks of is, let's check and see if all the budget trailer bills are online.
It's a sickness.
It's an occupational.
It ends today, though.
It's an occupational
it's a new year.
Sickness, right?
It's a new year.
We're going to start all over now. No more reading budget bills for the time being. I suppose as we look back and try to figure out what happened here, I mean, tell me what you, if we were to step back, what you make of all of this. I mean, bottom line is budget is in place in time for the new fiscal year beginning today. It is debatable as to whose budget it is. Republicans say it's the Democratic budget. Democrats say it's the budget they were forced on by Republicans, and on that goes. Bottom line, governor didn't get what he wanted for all these 5 months in particular. Is this a everybody wins or everybody loses? I mean, is that the way that we just left with this? It's the way of politics. Everybody sees it differently.
Yeah, I think it's one of these budgets that we've had in recent years where you can't really celebrate it as much as you might try. I guess the Assembly Republicans were in a celebratory mood yesterday. You were there, right?
Yes.
Downtown.
Celebrating the expiration of the taxes.
Yes. But the Democrats were not really celebrating. As you pointed out, the governor didn't even have a public signing ceremony, did it behind closed doors. And, they were not thrilled with the cuts they had to implement. They didn't get the taxes they wanted, and they're relying on this tax windfall that came through.
Well, let's talk about the windfall, because that's what we learned with on Monday. Because on Monday, as we sat here on Monday, as we sat here last week, you and I and the guy who we didn't invite this week, that's actually not the reason we didn't invite him, but I was going to make fun of it, Wyatt Buchanan from the Chronicle, who won the reporter pool for picking the correct date and time of the budget being signed. How much did he win? Like 60 bucks or something?
68 bucks, it looks like.
What do you think the state tax share of that winnings is? Is he going to file a supplemental with the Franchise Tax Board? But as we sat here in the studio last week on the podcast, and we were sitting there on Friday, and I think we effectively said, we think a deal will probably come at some point, but we don't know where it is. And they seem to be, still a long ways apart. And miraculously, things changed over the hours after that. And a lot of that is due to this new projection of revenue. And talk a little bit about that projection and the rumbling about what they knew and when they knew it.
Well, I actually liked Rex Babin's take on it. Editorial cartoonist for the Bee. He had a cartoon this week showing that the governor's dog, Sutter, had actually found the $4 billion somewhere hidden out on the Capitol grounds.
Dug a great big hole, and there was $4 billion bucks in there.
Yes. But, no, it was, okay, the governor did not like the dubious solutions of selling state buildings, of the single flip idea where the local sales tax would be raised on a majority vote. Didn't like the first five take. So what do? They decide, well, based on the tax dollars we're seeing come in May and June, we think we can actually project $4 billion higher in the next fiscal year.
And what's and I think one of the reasons that it got attention and in some corners suspicion was because if you looked back at the disagreements that you just laid out and you tally what those were worth, we were somewhere between $4 and $5 billion apart of what solutions that Brown and the Dems could agree on and closing the gap. And lo and behold, we found a $4 billion solution.
Yeah. So were they projecting to the target or were they projecting based on, you know...
What's your take after the week of asking these questions? Well, Kevin also asked the question again of the governor's budget director on Thursday. And
I mean, they say that they didn't know on the 15th that they could project out this much. It's true that the quarterly returns do come in that week. And they're now saying that the month of June is around 800 million higher than they anticipated in the governor's May budget just, you know, a month and a half ago. So they feel good about what they're seeing in May and June, and they think they can more or less extrapolate without doing an new economic projection. They can sort of extrapolate out and believe that they can count this $4 billion, but There is a trigger cut. So.
When you look back and you look back macro here for a moment, and I tried to do this earlier in the week because I wanted to go back to January. When Jerry Brown had taken office, he put his first budget out on January 10th. It had revenue estimates for the 2010-11 year that is now over as of a few hours ago and the 2011-12 year, total revenues that the state would take in. And then you go all the way forward to the budget that was signed into law this week, and you get somewhere around an $11 billion bump, above $11 billion bump.
Yeah, close to 12.
Yeah, in total, either revenues in the bank or projected revenues over those two budget years. That's right. So that's almost a $12 billion increase from what was seen in January, which begs the question, what the hell is going on? I mean, nobody thinks the economy is like back like gangbusters.
No, I mean, you keep hearing these jobless numbers and
yeah, there's all of this data about high income earners, capital gains, profits and things like that. Part of me, though, believes and you and I haven't talked about it, but I keep thinking this to myself and whoever I spit it out to when I walk around the Capitol. Part of me thinks that some of this reflects Brown's own philosophy about being conservative and careful when he came into office, and that a lot of governors might have asked the staff, give me some broader projections. And that's, you know, and the finance economist people, I mean, they're smart people, they're straight up people, there's not a lot of book cooking there, but you got to believe they take the marching orders of the boss about whether we should be more or less conservative in our projections. And that feels like to me a guy who came in with a conservative projection more than this unexpected Christmas time like windfall of
presents. That's certainly a possibility. I mean, he came in and he had a plan that relied on getting a tax vote. If you're trying to convince the public and you're trying to convince Republicans to put taxes on the ballot, you're probably going to want to lean conservative in your revenue estimates. Now, there is a check on that with the legislative analyst, and you know they seem to agree with his estimates. From what I recall.
Right. They never said he was being completely conservative, but I think they were even a little bit higher than Brown
a few
times
right.
There. And if nothing else, what that did, I mean, if it was totally unexpected or somewhat expected, well, actually, let's say if it was somewhat expected, it gave the governor the ability maybe in the back of his mind to know he could have a plan B that would work. He may have a way to get out of this short of the way he had laid it out in public, the everything collapses, you know, we can't pay our bills, yada, 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 yada. I mean, this, in other words, it's almost like, you know, it gave him the ability to push all the way until the 11th hour for his plan A, because maybe he had a plan C sitting back there, or at least he hoped he did. And again, that's not to say that all of this was known before this week or before the 15th when those quarterly numbers came in. But you did have some Democrats in the legislature, handful, maybe one. Maybe one who tweets a lot, a particular Democratic state senator from Torrance named Lou. But, you know, who, you know, was saying, like, you know, they should have told us this. We should have known this. You know, we should have known these revenue numbers before we sent him a budget that he vetoed. And then that's a lingering, small lingering, but lingering thing out of this week.
Yeah.
About how – and it goes back to revenue forecasting again and sure. how we make these decisions.
I mean, I'm guessing they had some signal by that point. You know, they might not have known the quarterly numbers by then. I mean, but – and it's now a moot point, but
it is.
Ted Lieu is it's frustrated.
It's a moot point except to the good senator.
But, I mean, going back to the number, I mean, the $12 billion, if you think about that, that's right around the number that the governor had counted on with his tax extensions. So, you know, at the end of the day, he did get revenues. It wasn't through the taxes, but he did get revenues to help solve this problem.
And I also think one more thing on the projections. If you go back and look at the January budget, Governor Brown came in and had his staff go back through the current year and downsize the expectations from the Schwarzenegger administration. And in reality, it looks like the Schwarzenegger numbers were more in line with what actually happened, which again goes to the playing it safe, making sure you don't get out beyond. And if you look at Brown's budgeting acts, you know, he stopped budgeting the tobacco tax money when mm-hmm. it looked like it was running into trouble. He walked away from the building sale lease thing because that looked like it was trouble. You know, again, it's not to say he is a master at budgeting, but I do think it reflects a more conservative, cautious mentality that worked out. So $15 billion, if we go back to the 26-ish, 27 almost number of a deficit, about $15 billion of less spending, and I say it that way rather than calling it spending cuts, because mm-hmm. as you and I went through, yeah. as Kevin and I went through, you can't define all of those as cuts. Some things that are put on the expenditure reductions category aren't cuts, like the change in redevelopment, for instance. But $15 billion in reduced spending over projections. We got the $11, $12 billion in revenues. There's still some wiggle room there about some deferred payments because the school money is huge,
yeah.
deferring about $3 billion of owed money to the schools.
And the $15 includes a $2 billion reduction in the amount owed to schools. But that $2 billion only became an amount owed to schools when the revenues bumped
right.
up. And they solved for that through some different maneuvers that are – probably too complex for us to talk about right now.
But it does certainly go to show that we get a lot of this in politics, this desire to do kitchen table budgeting. You know, I think a lot of politicians, you know, they're trying to appeal to people. You know, the folksy, we sit down at our kitchen table. This ain't kitchen table
no.
budgeting, even if people want it to be, because cuts and revenues are not completely well-defined. And the state doesn't pay its bills that way, and state government is more complicated than that. So as much as people want to use that, like, you know, it always comes out when somebody's angry about the way things are. You couldn't do this. Well, sure, you couldn't do a lot of these goofy gimmicks, but even a perfectly done budget is not what a family would do because of these, again, what is technically a reduction in spending, projected spending versus an actual cut. But there are real cuts in this budget.
Yes, definitely.
UC, CSU, clearly those are headlines.
They got hit hard.
Higher ed gets cut. Community colleges gets cut. Health and Human Services programs, again, through the whole year. They take cuts. The delayed money for K-12. What am I missing that was big out of the list?
What, Medi-Cal?
Medi-Cal, exactly right. Getting back into Health and Human Services, I guess. And then all of these other particular elements, these side deals, which gets us into the budget trailer bills, which we'll talk about. The governor accepted the Democratic legislative version of redevelopment, abolishing those agencies. He accepted the bill to collect online sales tax, the Amazon bill, as it's been dubbed. Those were the two big things that they had put forward, I think, right?
Yeah.
That he accepted out of,
there's
out
the,
of
fire
the Democratic
fee.
Plan. That's right. Exactly right. The fee, $150 per house, right, per dwelling.
Up in to rural, 150, yeah.
Rural areas that use state firefighting services, that they would have to pay for that. The vehicle registration fee goes up $12 per vehicle. That's a flat fee per vehicle. And then, of course, the tax is expiring, which, of course, everybody, as we said, talked about yesterday and today. Sales tax went down. Vehicle license fee, car tax went down. Income tax rolled off the books. Dependent tax credit went back up. You and I just had more money in our pocket from our kids. Anyway, trailer bills, though. Talk about trailer bills, in particular the education bill that you woke up so early to find, and it reveals the politics of the budget, does it not?
Yeah, I think that the education bill, you could tell that teachers won some protections in there, and it really is hard to do the budget without considering the budget. This is getting back to John's point about doing it around your kitchen table. Well, there's so many formulas in the budget that require you to shape it in a certain way. So Prop 98 has a huge bearing on how you shape your budget, the constitutional requirement related to schools. So in this case, we had an education trailer bill that basically protects teachers against any further layoffs in this upcoming fiscal and school year. And it's related to the trigger cut because in order to accept the trigger cut, a $1.5 billion cut to schools, 7-day reduction in the school year, teachers wanted a guarantee that districts would not lay off a few more teachers, right, to prepare for that worst-case scenario. There were other provisions in the bill that were favorable to teachers and could be favorable to them in negotiating later this year. And there's also a $2 billion repayment plan that is tied, that sort of lays the groundwork for this 2012 tax election. So there are a whole bunch of things in this trailer bill. We didn't get to see it until 10:15 that night?
Well, I was going to say, not even then. I mean, really no one had seen it before it was voted on. Not that that's completely unusual at the Capitol, but this was the taken to the nth degree. I mean, this was just still being mocked up in bill form, ran out, voted on.
I mean, voted on within minutes, right?
Yeah, yeah. They were still drafting it at Ledge Council. We were sitting around on Tuesday night waiting for it. And I should point out, I did neglect to talk about the trigger, which is an important element here, which is the way the governor dealt with the deeper cuts if we have to make them. And it apparently became a huge thing in whether the budget was financeable to go borrow money for. But the trailer bill on education strikes me as an interesting thing because earlier in the week, or I think it was even last weekend, in having a conversation with one insider, I guess I would call this person, at the Capitol, we were looking at this whole idea of there was talk, and this was not even the same person. You know how this is. We all talk to multiple people. But there was talk that ultimately the budget deal was going to take existing revenues and dedicate them to this realignment proposal, the governor's longstanding thing to shift programs from the state to the local control, county control, basically. And so that rather than using the taxes, which the governor wasn't going to get for that, they were going to specify existing revenues for that. Well, to specify existing revenues for it, you had to take those revenues out of the Prop 98 school funding guarantee. And so the particular person, capital person who I was exchanging emails with over the weekend said, why would the CTA ever agree to this? And you see, exactly. Yeah. It got the chuckle out of Kevin, especially because it was Kevin who dug through the bill. Well, when we saw the education trailer bill, perhaps we understood why, the most powerful education group in the state and one of those powerful interest groups in the state in general in politics would agree to something that looks like it lowers education funding because they felt they had a backstop about teachers being laid off and about cuts at the district level. I mean, that's a fascinating thing that this is, that the novelty of the state telling school districts, getting involved in how they balance their budgets based on what the state gives them.
Dictating more terms to districts. Districts typically have more control over their budgets. I mean, we saw this spring districts across the state were preparing in different ways for just based on how they were judging what would happen in the school's budget. I mean, you had some districts that thought they would take $350 per kid cut to their school budget. Others were saying up to $800 a child. So, but this is how they prepare early on. They have to kind of read the tea leaves. And now you have the state coming in saying, nope, what you have to do is assume that your budget's going to remain flat, remain the same as 10-11, which, you know, as another lobbyist pointed out to me today, that well, that's at the end of the day, we did get more funding than some people thought we were going to get, although we also lost a lot of our power. But, no, you're right. I mean, that's an interesting – it's an interesting show of the leverage CTA had in this deal. I mean, it's true that if – they hadn't gotten some of the protections they did get, they could have sued. They could have said, look, this budget is not constitutional. It's underfunding schools under Proposition 98. Legislative analyst has, I mean, they're not lawyers, but they've weighed in when I've talked to them on that matter. And they do think that, you know, without a constitutional firewall, it's less less safe to do this.
Yeah.
And in fact, if you the school boards and other district officials are up in arms now because they've had their powers taken away to a certain extent. And that the CSBA letter, School Boards Association letter, actually makes reference to pursuing or considering our legal options.
Yeah, and that's one of the interesting after effects of this, it looks like to me. I mean, and again, you know, I'm taking a bit of a leap here. I think it's a reasonable leap to assume the politics that goes into crafting a budget. But again, if you're a Democrat, if you're from the governor's side of things, you see you're not going to get the taxes you wanted. You're trying to figure out what your alternative here is. You know that you have to deal with education funding because it's such a big part of the budget. You've got to find a way to reduce the liability or the mandate for school funding. And you start figuring out what else can I do, and you get a powerful interest group to feel okay with it. But one of the after effects here too is that those education groups are usually a bloc. The education coalition is not a term that we give them in the press. They give themselves that. And that is typically the CTA and the School Boards Association and school administrators and these other different groups. Now you might have a few grumbling feelings, you would think, between those groups. I mean, as you said, the School Board Association is not happy with that trailer bill language. Got to imagine the CTA is. And so,
yeah, well, we saw the statement that came from CTA. It was kind of this measured response that we were also hearing from Democrats. Not a perfect budget, but, you know,
it'll work.
Congratulate Democrats on getting this done. And, you know, it's a budget we can live with.
Right.
But
so and that leads me to the other thing about trailer bills and after effect of this budget, which is, as everyone knows, budgets are presumed to be legal and the actions are presumed to be legal until someone takes them to court and says it ain't legal or a court says it ain't legal. So if no one challenges the education issue, and maybe they will, then that stays where it is. A few other things in this budget. Listen to me. I'm getting grandiose here. A few other things in this budget are likely headed to court. And first and foremost, redevelopment.
Yeah.
Redevelopment agencies tried for 5 months to find some alternative to Jerry Brown's January plan. The alternative the Democrats came up with is almost Brown's plan because actually it actually means more money. It's not a one-time. It's actually, wouldn't you say? I mean, it's in a way, it's an alternative that lets them continue to live after July 1st, but only if they agree to do a long-term revenue sharing plan. So it still takes $1.7 billion in this current fiscal year, and then it has this alternate plan. Bottom line, they think all of this is illegal. They think it's unconstitutional, and everything but officially say and see in court, even as the budget was being passed.
Yeah. I mean, to the point where I think he signed the redevelopment bills early Wednesday afternoon. Or no, I'm sorry. He actually signed them Tuesday night, but he announced them Wednesday afternoon. And my editor says, we better call the Redevelopment Association and find out if they're going to file suit today. Because, I mean, that they've been saying that you know, without a doubt, they were filing suits. So,
and they have not yet. They have not yet. But you would think that it can't be but so long because the ink gets dry, things start happening. Who knows? I mean, you know, people start saying that redevelopment agencies don't exist any longer. And wouldn't it? I mean, I'm not a lawyer. You're not a lawyer either. You're not one, but you've almost been one. but it would seem to me that it's harder to make the case, or it gets more complicated the longer you go, versus asking a court to step in before the dissolvement. Boy, I'm like really fading here. The eradication of the agencies actually happens. So we'll see.
Yeah. I mean, and there are other components, of course. Parts of the Medi-Cal cuts have to be approved by the federal government. The lower rates to providers, doctors, pharmacies, what have you, is being looked at.
And lower rates have been overturned in different but somewhat aligned circumstances.
What's happened, and as we've had to face these tough budget decisions, these cuts, a lot of advocates have seen that they can be successful in court. So, you know, once the ink is dry on June 30th, that certainly does not mean that these things are definitely going to happen.
The fee tax issue could end up in court as well. The notion of the firefighting fee, is that really a fee? Is it a tax?
Howard Jarvis, John Kapal, their president, was saying that they're looking hard at that. So
we may likely be walking over a few blocks to the county courthouse.
We heard Jim Nielsen, Assemblyman Republican, saying on the floor Tuesday night he's going to sue or join some kind of a suit to try to block realignment. And I talked to him a little bit afterwards. Yeah. He thought there was a separation of powers problem. He also thought that there could be a suit perhaps of the sort that we just talked about with the education groups, that's unconstitutional. So, big parts of this solution could be litigated.
As we wrap up on this, because we could go and go and go and go and put people to sleep, and let's face it, the budget is done. But I did want to talk about just briefly, what do you think's next? I mean, what do you think in terms of policy issues, political issues, but let's make it political. I mean, first of all, you know, governor comes out of this getting part of what he wanted, but not all of what he wanted. He doesn't sound like a guy who's giving up on his taxes or some kind of tax plan. I mean, you know, the whole November 2012 ballot measure thing has been floated out there. What do you take away in terms of it's over, but it ain't over?
Yeah, to be continued, I guess. And the 2012 ballot, I mean, we're all thinking November 2012. It actually, that trailer bill kind of spells out, or late November is the decision date on some of the funding issues. So they're presuming a November 2012 election for taxes. So there's going to be some battles. I mean, I think Brown's war of all against all. We'll see perhaps Republicans trying to get a pension measure on the ballot that suits them more than the one they were negotiating with Brown. You hear the Democrats say they're going to try to work on these reforms. The question is exactly what they're going to be willing to do.
And what's the incentive?
And what's the incentive, exactly.
And what's the incentive when you're sitting here a few months before a major election year? And that's the other thing I wanted to point out that a smart person pointed out to me. I'll give him credit someday, but maybe he won't want to be attached to this one. But I think it's a great point, which is this trigger mechanism for these additional cuts to happen, that's a calculation that happens in December-ish and the determination in January, right? Am I right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I think it said December 15th finance has to report back.
But effectively, we're talking about January before the full impact of that happens, either both policy-wise or the capital. And here's where the politics comes in. You could get, if revenues were really off, you could get that $1.5 billion cut to education, which is what the voters have said consistently they do not want to cut anymore. As was pointed out to me, suppose we had a legislative proposal to raise taxes directly for those schools come on the floor of the legislature in January with Democrats insisting that Republicans vote for it, and Republicans are faced with either voting for the tax, which they see as politically bad, not voting for it, and watch education get cut automatically, and you're in an election year, new districts, new primary system. I mean, it's a very fascinating dynamic then about the political reality, because it is a tax vote, but at the same time, something really will happen, assuming the revenues are off. Something really would happen if they did not vote for them then. There would be cuts to schools, which would be big news.
Yeah. So
it's an interesting scenario.
Even though this year seems so interesting, you're making next year sound like it's going to be crazy.
I'm ready to roll. Let's go.
I mean, this was just the prologue.
The hell with the weekend. Come on, let's just stay here and call people and write pondering stories.
2012. It's going to be quite even. And then you got the presidential campaigns. You got
And as Kevin, you said on Twitter, I had to pull it up here. I like the way I wanted to say this at the end because I thought Kevin. Gave us the Harper's Index version of what happened this week or what happened in June. We had two budgets, 12 days of no legislative pay, three bills vetoed, 19 Cal budget bills signed, and a fight in the assembly.
Well, it doesn't get any better than that. Yeah.
I wanted to say partridge in a pear tree, but I like the Harper's Index reference better. But yes, it was a full month.
It was. Wow.
And let's not do it again.
So we normally stretch this out for months and months.
Yeah.
And in some years, we don't ever get this kind of action even in those months.
And I said before we started this, in 10 years, the last 10 years that I've been covering budgets at the Capitol, the last 10 consecutive, I have spent one July 4th that I was either not in the building or on my email or monitoring budget negotiations or, as I said, in the building, in the hallway, sleeping in the back of the chamber of the assembly, and that was 2006, where they got it done on time. So this is only the second time in 10 years that this is a free weekend. I'm very excited.
Do you even
know
how to celebrate the 4th anymore?
I do not. I mean, like, I think I've been at pool parties most years with the phone in my hand. I will leave the phone home.
Wow.
There will be no Twittering.
Really?
There'll be, I promise you, no tweeting on July 4th.
Wow. No, really?
None.
Uh-oh.
And don't
Twitter Nation is going to go crazy.
Yeah, right. And then, like, you know, well, I don't know. I won't get bored. My wife will kill me. So, no, we're going to leave it all setting aside because it's done for now, and there'll be plenty to do next week, I'm sure, and on from there. Well, that's plenty for this budget. We have put this budget to bed, at least I hope.
I need to go to bed.
Yeah, well, you and me both. Kevin Yamamura from the Sacramento Bee, good enough to sit in with me, and I'm John Myers from KQED. Thanks for your patience at listening to All Things Budget. We'll see you next time.